BadQuaker.com podcast. My name is Ben Stone, and today is Tuesday, November 6th, 2012, and this is podcast number 225. And with me today, actually in studio, not in a tent, not in the forest, not in the woods, not with squirrels surrounding her, is my co-host, Kai Vick. Kai, thank you very much
Hello.
For joining me in the studio.
Yay!
We get to hear your voice in the recording that's not coming through a cell phone, bouncing off an antenna strung from a tree in the woods.
Let's hope it actually sounds better.
Yeah. We kind of got scolded a little bit for the sound quality of the last one where Kai was in the woods.
And so, just for that, I drove all the way from North Carolina to Ohio just so I could have a decent recording. No, I didn't.
Totally pegged out but... You just totally pegged out when you did that.
Did I?
Yeah. So today is that magical, wonderful day to all statists in the United States where they all get in line and raise their prayers high to the gates of Washington.
Yay.
It's voting day.
Yay. Although you wouldn't know it because in North Carolina, where I've been, it's been like, ridiculously cold, and so I've been going to the library and stealing free internet and electricity. And they've had early voting for like 3 weeks. And every day there's a line out the door.
Really?
Of people going and voting every day.
Wow, that's sad.
And not like a couple people on like their lunch break, like from the time we get there, the library opens at 10 o'clock. People are showed up at 9 to stand in line.
Now, doesn't that mean you're a bad anarchist if you go to the library and use the free internet?
No, because I'm stealing from the state.
But now, isn't that stealing from the people when you steal from the state?
No, I'm stealing from the people who have stolen from the people. I'm Robin Hood.
Except in real life, Robin Hood was just wanting a different governmental process.
Well, sure, but, you know, fairy tales.
Yeah.
Actually, it's not a fairy tale because it doesn't involve fairies or elves or anything of the fairy realm. But, you know, that's... Never mind. I've read too much Tolkien. You know, he does whole essays on fairy stories.
We're talking about Tolkien. You have to use proper English.
Right.
He doesn't do them anymore.
He might. You don't know.
He did. Yes, he did.
Yes, I have read them.
I started to say, I have read them.
I own them, in fact, because I am a giant nerd.
Oh, yeah. Well, I memorized. No, I didn't even. I didn't actually. So, hey, let's address that topic that I started, that I made a smart comment about a minute ago. Because I've seen this so many times that, and you know, it's a pretty thin argument, but it's something that statists really think that it's an I gotcha.
Uh-huh.
And they're like, well, you used the roads.
Exactly. It's that roads mentality. I don't understand what their fascination with roads are, but like they view that as the absolute winning argument. Like, without government, there could be no roads, and you support the government because you drive on the roads.
Yeah. It's completely unattached thoughts.
Yeah.
Like, oh, well, you know, the longest road in the world that lasted for the longest period of time was the Silk Road. It was created entirely by merchants and locals for the purpose of transporting goods and services, and it was all entirely anarchical.
And there was no tolls on it.
There was no tolls, and there was no governments controlling it. Now, there were little strongmen here or there who tried.
Right.
But typically, they would end up with their village burned or their castle burned or whatever.
Right. Well, or the road would be rerouted around it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because the merchants would just, you know, seek freedom and go around it.
And, you know,
or they would hire mercenaries.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is perfectly
private security.
Yeah, which is perfectly anarchical.
And people say all the time, you know, oh well, without in a private sector, the roads would all be toll roads. Well, have you driven like in downtown Dallas? Because there's really nowhere you can go without getting on a toll road.
Yeah, that's a lot like
you
the Northeast.
I mean, unless
too.
You want to spend 3 hours driving 10 miles.
Also, you know, private roads exist today. Because that's what a parking lot is.
Yeah.
And I've never actually, well, yeah, I have too. City parking lots, often there's a toll.
Oh, yeah.
But most, private parking lots, there's no toll.
Yeah.
Sometimes somebody will build a parking garage and there's a toll for that because that's essentially that's serving a market need.
Right.
So, actually it's working around a market distortion that the city government has created.
Right.
In forcing people through zoning laws to pack all the businesses into one location. I just smacked the mic waving my arms about. I'll try not to do that. Anyway, but we're not addressing the argument that you're not a good anarchist because you drive on a road.
I disagree entirely. I think the most that you can take from the state, take as much as you can. Take more than you need. Take from the state. Take. Always take. Try to give as little as possible and take as much as possible.
It's a funny thing because, you know, the good taxpayers, the good citizens, they're forced at the point of a gun to support the government.
Mm-hmm.
And then once that money is stolen from them and goes off into the government, then they somehow worry about somebody else that might get that money.
Right. Who doesn't deserve it.
Yeah, it's like, okay, let's create a scenario where you have a guy walking down the street minding his own business with a pocket full of cash.
Right.
And a bad guy jumps out to rob him, sticks a gun in his face, robs him of the cash. And the guy's first thought is, I certainly hope the bartender down the street won't take that cash from this horrible thief.
Right.
Would that make sense? Or wouldn't you think, I need to get rid of this thief. The thief is the problem.
I don't care. I don't care where that money goes after it's taken from me.
Yeah, the point is they stole it.
Right.
Not what they do with it afterwards.
Right.
The point. But if you were a thief and you were slick enough and smart enough to convince your victim that it doesn't matter that he's taking it. It only matters that he's going to use it for good.
Right.
That would either take the most magical con man thief ever or a really stupid victim.
Right. Or both.
the other thing.
Because really, the idea of the state is the biggest con that has been portrayed in history.
It is.
Like, it is the biggest scam that has ever been pulled off in history.
Yeah.
And it's been going on now for what, 6,000 years?
I think about nine.
Nine? Yeah. 9,000 years?
Yeah.
That's pretty good for a scam.
Yeah. and it's generational. It repeats itself.
and it's self-perpetuating.
Yeah. The other way to look at it, okay, let's go back to with the thief and the robber. I mean, the thief and the victim. So the victim is walking down the street with a pocket full of cash, and the thief jumps out in front of him, sticks a gun in his face, says, give me your wallet. And so you pull out your wallet and hand it to the thief, and the thief opens the wallet and looks in, and there's $400 in there. And he goes, you know what? You're going to need, you're going to need taxi money to get back home. So I'm going to take your money, but I'm going to leave you $20 so that you can get a taxi home.
Right.
And would you then say to the robber, I wouldn't dream of taking that money back? Or would you rather say, sure, you know what? And I'm really hungry. Could I have another 20 so I can have some lunch on the way home?
Right.
You know, and if the robber will give you 40 of your money back, then should you not take it?
Right.
Or if the robber, if you and five of your family members are walking down the street and a gang of robbers surround you and begin robbing you, if over the course of the process you can confuse your robbers and get them to give your cousin some of your money,
right?
Would you then blame your cousin?
Right.
I mean, you know, if any of you, you're all getting robbed.
Right.
So if you can baffle the thieves enough so that any of you can get money back from that.
Right.
Then why would you begrudge your cousin and not realize that the problem that you're facing is the thieves, the gang?
Right.
Isn't that more logical than worrying about whether or not somebody else is using the roads, or worrying about whether or not somebody's using the library, or whether or not somebody's collecting unemployment or welfare assistance or food stamps or something like that?
Mm-hmm. I really truly think that the only way to get rid of the state in a permanent fashion is to withdraw all support from it and use its resources until it drives itself into the ground.
Well, there's one other aspect that I would add to that, and that is, until the bulk of people really see what the nature of the state is, they're going to continue to want the state.
Mm-hmm.
The state only exists now because people think it's good and they want it.
Right.
So there's a market for it. So when the state gets so ugly that people can't look the other way and
right.
they can't deny the real nature of the state, then they're going to realize they don't want it.
Right.
So the two aspects, the one you just mentioned, which is, bleed the state dry of every nickel you can get out of it. And the other is allow it to be as oppressive as possible. Just point it out.
Right.
Don't try to stop it. Just point it out.
Well, and the state has a fail-safe. It has a certain mechanism where when it gets too big and it gets too ugly and it gets too violent, it makes people want a revolution, and it makes them use the tools of the state to set up a new state.
Right.
And this is how it perpetuates itself. And so you have to, when the state gets to that point where people are beginning to see, hey, this is a horrible thing, instead of allowing it to have its natural mechanism of revolution, violence, setting up a new state, if you have already set up a society, basically, that has an open market and has free trade and has voluntaryism. Never say that word. Such a difficult word to say. And you can offer an alternative and say, hey, let's not do a revolution and start this all over again and doom the next 6,000 years of people,
yeah.
Or 9,000 years of people or whatever to this again.
Mm-hmm.
Let's end it.
Yeah.
That I think is important too.
Yeah. Yeah. Any kind of alternative, outside of the system
mm-hmm.
type, markets.
And the other thing is keeping your head down.
Yeah.
Because if you are locked up in prison or if you are killed or whatever, you're done. You
yeah.
can't.
Think of two function. Schiffs. Think of two Schiffs. Think of Peter Schiff and Erwin Schiff. Are you familiar with Erwin Schiff?
I know the name.
Erwin Schiff is a brilliant man. He may be wrong on a couple things, but
right.
Peter Schiff is wrong on a couple things. Peter
right.
Schiff is a prominent libertarian financier.
Right.
He's really pretty smart. He's
right.
made a lot of money, and he's a libertarian, and he's doing a lot of good things. I don't agree with him 100%. I think, but he's doing a lot of great things.
Right.
His dad is maybe smarter than him.
Mm-hmm.
Had the potential of doing far more,
mm-hmm.
but got himself thrown in jail, and now almost nobody knows who he is because he's going to spend the rest of his life, most likely, in jail.
Right.
As a matter of fact, the last I heard, he was in Terre Haute, in the federal penitentiary there, so he may actually be hearing our voice because there's a local independent pirate radio station there that broadcasts the LRN. So.
Nice.
But the point being that, martyrs never work.
No.
Not the way, I've said this quite a few times, the classic examples of martyrs are like Jesus, Gandhi, Martin Luther King. The problem with this is, with Jesus, he set aside the religious aspects of the sacrifice and set aside
right.
all that. But the actual movement that Jesus created and the teachings that he created, when he was martyred, within one generation, the whole story changed.
Right.
Nowhere in Jesus's teachings did he say, hey, create for me these massive structures and fill them full of gold and everybody dress up in funny costumes
right.
and set up a whole series of rules that you have to do this and this and this and this.
Well, and actually, martyrs work really, really well if you're the state.
Yeah.
If you look at nearly all of the really tyrannical states that have popped up in history, almost all of them start out with a martyr.
Yeah.
You know, you're talking about like Lenin and, you know, Che Guevara, mm-hmm. and yeah, martyrs work well for the state.
Yeah.
Because the person is dead. They can't say, oh, well, that's not what I meant, or, you know, you're not following what I'm teaching correctly. They are now just a figure that you can paint on the side of a wall, mm-hmm. and you can say that you're doing things in their name,
yeah.
when in reality you're not doing anything that they were teaching.
That's exactly what happened with Martin Luther King, except mm-hmm. it stopped the revolution.
Yeah.
So it happened like that, but almost in reverse. But, you know, he was martyred.
Right.
And then immediately everybody started singing the song, so to speak,
right.
of praise of Martin Luther King. But you can't seriously, with a straight face, look at the leadership of the movement that he founded, Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton,
right.
and say, yes, these guys are walking in his footsteps, continuing his work.
Right.
Instead, what you have is Martin Luther King became more of a myth and a justification for the government to take over his movement and do
right.
what they wanted with it.
Exactly.
You know, when you think of Gandhi, you know, Gandhi wanted peace. He was a man of peace.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted peace, and he wanted independence from British rule.
Right.
And he didn't want a government that oppressed the people.
Right.
And so now we have India as a government over the people in that land.
Right.
And it's a nuclear threat to two of its neighbors. It's been at almost for years. It was in war with its neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
It still horribly oppresses its citizens.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not so bad as some countries like the U.S., but you know, you can actually do things in India without the government's permission.
Right. There's a smaller percentage of the population in jail.
Yeah.
Though there's a higher percentage starving. So.
Yeah. Yeah. The government's still oppressive there, just in different ways.
Yeah.
But either way, it's not what Gandhi would have designed.
No, and there's still a very strict class.
Yeah.
You know.
And his system. Descendants are the ones who guided that.
Yeah. And it's what happens.
Mm.
The state loves a good martyr.
Yeah.
You know, and as liberty-minded individuals, we have to try our hardest not to become martyrs, because martyrs can't speak for themselves.
Yeah. We kind of wandered from roads there to martyrs, but...
Well, this is the Schizophrenia podcast, so we can kind of get away with that. We don't really have a good ability to stay on topic.
Is it schizophrenia or is it...
bipolar?
Yeah.
It might be bipolar.
Or what's the other thing where you can't concentrate on one thing for...
Oh, ADD?
Yeah.
Yeah, ADHD or whatever. Ooh, shiny.
Well, anyway, so I hear the music coming in. It's time for a break. So stick with us. We'll be right back. I'd like to talk to you about Tom Woods' Liberty Classroom. The Liberty Classroom is a collection of courses on history and Austrian economics presented in an easy, convenient way. There are video files and audio files you can download. You can participate in discussions online in the discussion boards. And there are live sessions with Tom Woods and the other educators where you can directly interact with the instructors. Now, who is this for? It's for anyone who realizes that they didn't get the real story in government-approved schools. It's also great for homeschoolers and unschoolers. Join Tom Woods and his team, and they'll equip you with one of the very best tools the Liberty Movement has to offer, knowledge, real knowledge in a usable form. At Tom Woods' Liberty Classroom, you can get all this for only $99 a year. Now, that's less than the cost of one movie DVD a month. This gets you access to absolutely everything on their site, all the courses plus additional courses that'll be added later, the discussion forums, the live sessions, everything. So how do you do this? You go to badquaker.com. You click on the banner for Tom Woods Liberty Classroom. By using that link, you'll let Tom know that I sent you, and you'll help badquaker.com. Thank you very much. Did you know author Taryn P. Lupo has a new novel out called One Nation Under Blood? When a rejuvenative blood technology is developed that pits the young against the old, the government must take firm steps to address the war of supply and demand brewing across generational lines. Blood is not the only thing bought and sold in this dystopian tale of technology, economics, and independence. Vampires are now very real, but we never expected them to wear our grandmother's best Sunday dress. Okay, thanks for sticking with us through the commercial. And again, Kai is joining me in the studio for hopefully a better sounding podcast than the last one, where she was in the woods calling through a tin can in a string that went from squirrel to squirrel and had to be tapped out in Morse code.
Yeah, that was kind of rough, you know, only having to deal with the technology of having a cell phone on the internet with Skype. I mean, gee, what is this, the Middle Ages?
I know, it's like the pioneers.
Right? I can't believe it. I can't believe I have to deal with that level of technology.
Yeah, and it was so horrible that we produced a podcast with you in the woods on a cell phone, sending around the world, listened to by people in Germany and Poland and, you know, Australia and South Korea.
So this time I fixed that by driving all the way from North Carolina to Ohio just to record a podcast so that the quality would be good.
And this quality podcast is dedicated to Ian Freeman and Michael W. Dean.
I'm kidding. I didn't come here for the podcast. I came here for the bacon. The podcast was extra.
Well, plus you had to do laundry somehow.
Well, yeah. The most expensive load of laundry I've ever done in my life.
We should clarify here, because we have a lot of new listeners. In the last month, we have really gained a lot of new listeners. So,
hi, new listeners.
So I'm Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker podcast. This is Kai Vick. Kai works for traveling carnivals.
No, bad. Bad Quaker. Bad.
Are there jugglers involved?
Well,
answer the question, Miss.
Yes, there are jugglers. But no, there are no carnies.
So now let's clarify. You work
Renaissance. Nobody throws anything at a pile of milk bottles to knock them over.
What do they throw them at?
You throw axes at a wooden panel, and you don't get any prizes.
Much different.
And it's awesome.
So you work Renaissance festivals. You travel around and work the Renaissance festivals.
Sporadically, when I decide that I need some money.
You're not dedicated to it.
I'm not dedicated to it. I'm not really dedicated to much in my life at this moment. But, you know, it's fun. But, yeah, I'm doing a fair in North Carolina, and which, by the way, if you're in the area and you want to come out and buy chocolate from me, it would be awesome. Just saying. True facts, yo.
What is the sales pitch? Always be closing. You know that?
No.
They teach salesmen that. That's one of the phrases that they teach salesmen, like always be closing. Closing the deal.
Right.
You know. So I suppose the Rennie is the same way. They're always selling. They're always, you know, hucking their
product.
Pretty much.
I had somebody, okay, so this is just not at all on the topic of anything, but I'm going to rant for like half a minute here. I've been doing Renaissance festivals for over 7 years. I work them pretty much exclusively. I know how to sell things at a Renaissance festival. I'm not the world's best salesperson. I'm not. But I'm halfway decent. I'm decent enough to get jobs and sell things and make money. So I had this cast member come up, and this is Rennie beef. So it's probably not interesting at all to anybody who's not a Rennie. But cast members don't sell things. They just walk around and they talk to patrons
and dress up
and they make them, you know, have fun, and they're an important part of the Renaissance Festival, and they're just as important as the salespeople, every bit as important.
In a sense, they make the market for the salespeople to be able to.
Exactly. They are the ambiance.
Yeah.
But they're mostly local most of the time. And so they do the one fair once a year, and that's it. And they normally have jobs and lives and everything like that. And they're not dependent on the Ren Fair for their day-to-day life. You know, it's just a fun hobby for them, which is great. Awesome. Mm. But, I'm there to make a living. Like, I'm there to sell things and make a living. And so I have this one cast member who comes up to me and is trying to tell me how I can better sell things. And I was really hungover and I was not happy with it. And I really, really, really wanted to hurt him, and I didn't, and it was awesome. Anyway, yeah, that was probably just a rant for nothing. But
so you didn't thrash him mercilessly?
I didn't, but I really wanted to. He kept telling me, like, if you interact with them more and if you tell them jokes and things, they'll stick around. Like, we've had people that we've talked to for hours, and I'm like, I don't want to talk to them for hours. I want them to walk up and buy a candy bar on a stick and walk away.
And get out of my way so I can sell more candy on a stick.
I want them to buy a caramel apple for their kids and then leave. That's what I want. I don't want to talk to them for hours. I don't want to talk to you for hours. Like, go away.
Well, you know, most people don't realize that even places like restaurants, you know, even if they have a table, mm-hmm. and even if they come up and serve you and talk to you, really what they want you to do is shove that food down your face as quick as possible.
Oh, yeah.
And clear out of the way so they can clean the table and get the next customer.
There are some settings where you want the customer to stick around as much as possible. Grocery stores, Walmart, malls, things like that. But even in a mall, you want them to be in the mall, but you don't want them to be in the stores for hours.
Right.
You know, you want them to walk around and, mm-hmm. and go places and, you know,
see things in windows, go in, buy it, get back out.
Right. Exactly. You don't want them to,
mm-hmm.
you don't want them to sit there and talk to your salespeople for hours.
Yeah. And that's really not the key. That costs money. That doesn't make money.
Yeah. So anyway, that was my little salesperson rant for the day. There's a lot of class issues at a Renaissance festival that aren't necessarily, obvious to the public.
Now, and when you say class issues, you're talking about like what we're talking about with India a minute ago.
Pretty much. Like the difference between, you know, the people who sell for a living, the people who sell just at that fair on the weekends and have other lives, and the jousters and there's a lot of
entertainers that go from place to place,
and the cast members, and there's a lot of,
and then there's a whole group of people that go to Renaissance festivals dressed up completely and are not paid in any way. They're just there to have fun.
Oh, they pay to go in. They're patrons. Yeah. That's what the term is, patrons. And I love patrons. I do. I love them. They are our bread and butter. Like, they keep the Renaissance festivals alive. They mm-hmm. really do. You know, without patrons, without people dedicated to coming out there and dressing up and being like professional aficionados of Ren fairs, we would not exist.
Yeah.
And that is our goal, is to make the people who just come in for the first time, we want to make them that.
You hook them. Like pushers.
We are. It's an addiction thing.
Yeah. Here, have a free leather mask. Yeah. Next one's not free. We gotcha. Although, I don't think there's going to be any free leather masks at the Renaissance Festival.
No. Not unless you spend a lot of money. Maybe if you buy like 70 of them, we'll throw one in for free.
Hey, let's jump back to the voting thing just for a
minute.
Right,
voting, we were talking about that.
With it being the, you know, the holy and mighty election day.
Where you get to go, you know, ask your Lord if he will please give you a few more crumbs at the table.
Yeah. One of the other arguments about voting is, it's your right to vote, and there are people who fought and died or risked their life for you to have that right.
Right.
What are the fallacies? Well, at least a few dozen. What are the fallacies in a statement like that?
All of them, every word. There's not a word in that that's true. Well, the beginning of that is that this is something that when you begin to pick this idea apart, mm-hmm. you will make a lot of, even libertarians, even minarchists, you will make them really, really mad at you. Because it's the idea that the army, not just the military, the idea that the military protects our freedoms.
Mm-hmm.
Or protects our ability to vote, our ability to, you know, do whatever.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that the United States military defends the freedoms of the United States citizens.
Yeah.
Is something that is really easy to pick apart. And when you begin doing that, it makes people really, really, really angry at you. Well, because the military is seen as this high holy thing that you can't, you know, you can sit there and say, I'm against the government, and people will be like, okay. But when you say I'm against the military, it's viewed as this horrific, you are like a baby eater and you set things on fire and are a terrible human being.
I think where the problem there comes in, though, you know, for some people, if you say, you know, the United States government is an evil entity that does bad things, as soon as you say that, they think you're talking about their mother.
Right.
They think you're talking about their neighbor. They
right.
think you're talking about American culture.
Right.
And you know, Lucy and Desi Arnaz. That's
right.
what they think you're attacking.
Right.
They can't distinguish in their mind the difference between that gang of thieves that houses mostly in the Washington, D.C. area, but also in your local city government.
Right.
They can't distinguish that concept of those thieves and separate it from the American people and
right.
American culture. And
yeah, when,
you know,
when I say I don't like the United States government, I'm not attacking apple pie and baseball and
right.
the Super Bowl. And I mean, I can sit there and attack those things if you'd like me to, but I'm not with that statement.
You're anti-apple pie. Huh?
I am. It has gluten and other things that are nasty and often made with vegetable oil.
But there's this distinction between the American people.
I get so much hate mail for that.
The American people is one thing, and the American government that dominates those people is a totally different thing.
Right.
And it's the same thing with the military. If you think of individual people for whatever circumstances that are in uniform, but if you think about the people in Washington, D.C., the people in the Pentagon, and the concept of the military as a whole, thinking of it just like the government.
Right.
Then you have an evil entity.
Right.
That doesn't mean the individual uniformed person is an evil entity.
Right.
He may be in that, or she may be in that uniform for any number, dozens of reasons.
Right.
And those could be good reasons or bad reasons.
Right.
But that's not the problem. The problem is that the United States military has never defended your, in quotes here, big air quotes, right to vote.
No.
The very first war that you could say that the U.S. was involved in, there was no U.S. government.
Right.
There was a loose
very
confederacy.
Small group of people.
Yeah. There was a loose confederacy of representatives of sort that chose to officially take on the British government. But they were in no way a federal government.
Right.
They were in no way a state like we consider the federal government of the United States today.
Right.
And they fought that war of independence, not for the purpose of getting the vote.
No.
Because, first off, they already voted.
Right.
And second off, the voting had nothing to do with what was going on with the oppression from England.
Right.
You know, the House of Burgesses existed in Virginia, and mm-hmm. there were other bodies and other, colonies and so forth. So there was already self-government to a large extent for
right.
the amount that government actually existed.
Right.
What they were fighting against was these guys that came in from a foreign island and forced themselves into their homes, searched them at random, you know, at the will of
unfairly taxed them.
Yeah, taxed them for all kinds of things that if they fought, to stop the taxation, they failed.
Right.
Because immediately, you know, as soon as the war got over, then a small group of shysters hijacked what little bit of a government there was, tossed out the Articles of Confederation,
yeah.
got the Constitution passed, and hit America with taxes.
Worse taxes than they had under Britain.
Yeah, so if they could vote before, and they could vote after, and they had taxes before, and they had taxes after, then the War of Independence was not about taxes or voting.
Right.
So it's impossible, in a logical sense, to blame the War of Independence on taxes or voting. The War
right.
of Independence was an attempt to get out from under the domination of an evil government.
Right.
Okay, so the next
Which
war
failed.
Yeah, exactly. Now, in a sense, the next wars that were fought was the beginning of the Indian Wars.
Right.
And these happened mostly in Ohio, Indiana, Illinois area.
Well, and there was you know, the Whiskey Rebellion.
Yeah, at the same time, which was a fight of the Appalachian people against the federal government because they didn't want to be taxed.
Right.
And specifically because whiskey was, you know, money in much of Appalachia, it was an income tax.
Right.
And it was found out later that it was against the law, but that didn't keep Washington from marching troops on American citizens and killing them.
Right.
But anyway.
But aside from that.
But the first, you know, as soon as the federal government got in control, they started invading land that they had absolutely no, in any way, no right to invade, which was specifically Ohio, Indiana, and Illinois.
Right.
That was not a part of England. England never claimed that land.
Right.
France had certain land claims to it, but never pursued those land claims.
Right.
So the land of Ohio, Indiana, and Illinois were agreed upon between the British and the French that that was the land of the natives that lived there.
Right.
And the first thing Washington did, pretty much even before he got the whiskey tax through, was to send invasions into Ohio.
Right.
And why was that? Because he had already surveyed Ohio and owned a big chunk of it.
Right.
Surprise.
Yay.
So that was not about, you know, for voting.
No.
That was not about taxation.
No.
That wasn't to free anybody from anything. It was to invade a foreign land and take what was theirs.
Yes.
Okay, so then the first legitimate war that we might say where war was declared was the War of 1812. And every school textbook and every government-backed school in the U.S. lies about the War of 1812. But the real truth is available. It's really easy to get a hold of. The War of 1812 was not fought over sailors being conscripted by the British, because that went on the whole time and nobody complained about it, or they certainly didn't fight a war about it.
Right.
The War of 1812 was entirely a war of aggression of the U.S. on Canada in an attempt to annex Canada.
Right.
And the plan, very well spelled out and very, you know, this is not my conspiracy theory stuff. This is all documented. The plan was to take Canada and then take Mexico. And they actually wanted everything from, you know, well above Nova Scotia all the way to the Isthmus of Panama.
Right.
They wanted that whole thing in the possession of the U.S. federal government. That was their plan. They wrote it out in words. You can read it yourself. You know? So the War of 1812 was not about, you know, winning someone's, quote, right to vote.
Right.
And so what's the next war that comes up? The war with Mexico. The war with Mexico was fought entirely for the purpose of taking the northern half of Mexico.
Right.
What we now think of as parts of Texas, Arizona, New Mexico, Colorado, Utah, California, Nevada. Did I say Nevada already?
No.
Anyway, that's what that war was about.
Right.
I wasn't there.
I wasn't there.
But the U.S. government.
I had nothing to do with it. You can't prove I was there.
But the U.S. government wanted the whole northern half of Mexico, so they took it.
Right.
And they had to invade the capital of Mexico in order to do that.
Right.
And they actually captured the president or the imperial palace and held held control of that with Marines until Mexico gave up and signed the papers giving us what you might say is the best parts of Mexico. You know, the part that contained all the gold.
Right. And silver.
Because that was kind of
and
important.
Oil, although that wasn't important at the time.
And huge copper deposits.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the war with Mexico was not about voting. So then we come to the war of Lincoln's war of aggression upon the South, shall we say?
Right.
And in that sense, you might be able to argue.
Well, and you missed the Spanish War.
Oh, that came later. With Spain, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. That was.
You might be able to make the argument that the South, the Confederacy, was fighting for the right to vote themselves a separation from the government in Washington.
Right.
You might be able to make that argument.
Because they had that ability.
Yeah.
And states had removed themselves from the Union before.
Yeah. And according to, you know, the government documentations like the Constitution, they had the right to do that.
Right.
So you might be able to make the argument that the Confederacy was fighting in some part for the right to vote.
Right.
But they lost.
Yeah.
Lincoln, you know, murdered, 400,000 Americans in order to prove that they did not have the right to separate themselves. So the so-called Civil War was not a war about voting.
Right. You know, it wasn't the side that won was not the side that was pro voting.
Yeah.
We'll put it that way.
Yeah. Okay, so then next we have, again, the Indian Wars.
Right.
Definitely not a war to get the Indians the right to vote.
Definitely not.
I can't imagine, you know, the U.S. troops out there mowing down Indian women and children so that they could vote.
No, I don't see that happening.
With their Hodgkin guns out there, you know, shooting into Indian villages, blowing up people's Indian bodies just so they could make sure they had the right to vote.
Right. Well, and you know, the Native Americans were, coming into the white settlements and keeping them from voting.
Yeah, you know, that's something history forgets, that's the whole thing that Sitting Bull loved to do that. He loved to
ride. Well, that's why he was called Sitting Bull, because he would sit in front of the ballots and not allow people to go in.
And this is the part of history we're making up.
Right. This is sarcasm. If it may come across difficult to tell, but that's dripping with sarcasm.
Let's break for this commercial, and we'll be right back, and we'll talk more about whether or not voting is a right and whether or not anybody ever fought for it.
Did your world collapse when Ron Paul didn't win? Don't keep hoping for some great man to fix government through government. Complete your evolution today to full-on anarcho-capitalist. Reward your brain with the freedom beans and quit breaking your heart with some politician. While the libertarians argue,
but who would build the roads?
The freedom fiends have already built the roads and moved on to making the great media content of the libertarian paradise. Freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Would you like to do something to support BadQuaker.com? Here's how easy it is. If you're already going to buy something from Amazon, go to BadQuaker.com first. Click on any of the buttons for Amazon. Once at Amazon, shop like you normally would. You'll pay the same price for the things you buy from Amazon, but Amazon will give BadQuaker.com a tiny portion of that purchase. It's amazingly easy to shop at Amazon, it won't cost you any extra, and you'll be supporting BadQuaker.com. Thank you. Okay, thanks for sticking with us through the break. And once again, I'm Ben with Bad Quaker Podcast, and with me today is Kai.
Hello.
My sometime co-host and daughter. And so we should say, like we always say,
all the time daughter. I'm not your sometime daughter. I'm all the time daughter.
Well, it's according to if I need to admit it in public or not.
Oh,
no,
I see.
No, I'm kidding. But yeah, and we often say that we are the only father-daughter anarchist podcasting team on the internet / radio in the universe.
That we know of.
So back
in
to
this or any other universe.
Yeah. So back to our discussion of history there. So we're at the Indian Wars. The Indian Wars certainly weren't to get anybody the right to vote.
Right.
And so the next war that the U.S. was in, I wasn't there. I want it on the record that I've never knowingly killed anyone.
Yes, I can say this as well.
So, we have the next official war that the U.S. was in was the war with Spain. This was a war where the U.S. was the aggressor. The U.S. initiated the war.
Right.
There was an excuse. A boat blew up.
Right.
But that was an excuse. The U.S. initiated the war.
Right.
And, it's hard to look at the facts of the case and not realize that the war was initiated purely for the purpose of the U.S. taking Spanish colonies.
Right.
And then once the U.S. thoroughly thrashed, the U.S. having a modern iron fleet of ships.
Right.
And the Spanish still having actually sailed ships. And somehow we beat the great Spanish armada.
I am shocked. Truly shocked.
And so after this great and magnificent victory, defeating this poor old beaten empire of Spain, the U.S. government sent Marines into the Philippines to ethnically cleanse the Philippines. And most Americans have no idea that happened.
Right.
And as the Marines were murdering the people in the Philippines, it was not so that they could vote.
Right.
It had nothing to do with the vote.
Right.
And so then the next interference in world politics that the U.S. involved itself in was World War I. And World War I was not about the ability to vote.
No.
It was a little squabble within the governments of Europe that the U.S. capitalized on so that the U.S. government could gain more power on the world scene.
Right, which it did.
Yeah. And so then the next war is the good war. The war that's always talked about is, yeah, that's the good war. World War II, that's when we saved the world from the Nazis. Except Hitler was elected and the Germans could vote.
Right.
And no one was threatening the American vote.
Right.
So.
And had, you know, everybody talks about how the Nazis wanted to take over the world, but they really, really didn't. And it was not part of the plan. And not only that, but Hitler really thought that we were on his side.
He thought FDR was a great guy.
That was his opinion. Like, he didn't want to come here and take over the same way he didn't want to take over Italy.
Yeah.
Because Italy was his ally.
Well, he didn't even take over half of France.
No, he only wanted the bit that France had taken from him in the last war.
Well, not him personally, but
country.
And he also wanted that little strip across the north, but that goes back to like Charlemagne and
right.
stuff.
Well, and so, you know, the reason that Hitler got in power and the reason we made that happen, we did.
Yes.
Well, not you and I, but
the U.S. government.
United States government made that happen. That is Wilson's fault.
Yeah. Among others.
But yes. The reason that Hitler was able to gain power and the Nazis were able to gain power in Germany is because we left a power vacuum and we left a crippled government behind.
The U.S. government.
Yes, the U.S. government. It's hard not to say we.
And they did that to the Germans and dumped a massive debt on them that there was no possible way they could have paid off.
Exactly. And it's so World War One was the reason World War Two happened. And the United States government was on the wrong side in World War One. If the government had any business being in it in the first place, which they did not.
Right. Okay. So then we go to Korea. The North Koreans never once threatened Americans' right to vote.
Right.
The next one was Vietnam.
Right.
Vietnam never threatened America in any way and never threatened anyone's right to vote.
Right. France got us into that one.
We got into that because of our alliances with France, and then the finding out, well, you know what? There are certain companies that can make a huge amount of money if we go and fight in Vietnam for a bunch of years and
Monsanto.
Have a bunch of dead Americans. That'll make a lot of money, Shell Oil.
Yeah.
General Electric, General Dynamics.
Monsanto.
Ford Motor Company. Anyway, did you know that Robert McNamara, you know who Robert McNamara was? He was he Secretary of Defense? I think he was Secretary of Defense under Kennedy and then Johnson after him.
Mm-hmm.
He might have been Secretary of State, but I think he was Secretary of Defense. Anyway, Robert McNamara was like a vice president of Ford Motor Company before they brought him. Yeah.
Shocking.
Anyway.
Surely not.
So then we leave Vietnam and we agree that Vietnam was not about Americans having the right to vote.
No.
And so then, in the 80s, Reagan bombed a few people and shot up some people, mostly not as bad as a lot of other presidents.
Right.
But none of it was about voting.
Right.
None of it was about America's right to vote.
Right.
And so then along comes, Baby Bush. I'm sorry, Papa Bush. Papa Bush came before the Baby Bush. And the Papa Bush did not murder all those people in the middle of the desert out there so that Americans could vote.
Right.
He did not.
Right.
He did not invade Panama so that Americans could vote.
Right.
And then along came, you know, little Billy Clinton. And Billy Clinton did not bomb people I always get those areas of Kosovo and Sarajevo. I always get all those places confused.
Right.
But none of that went on there when, you know, the peace president was killing people, none of that happened so that Americans could vote.
Right.
And then magically out of nowhere and for no reason whatsoever, planes flew into buildings on 9/11.
Right.
And we have no idea why that happened and we don't want to think about why that happened.
It was because the terrorists hate our freedoms.
Evidently.
What did I just say? I just said it. Just did. Sorry,
during,
I have the doctor calling.
During the commercial break, Kai said, oh, I should have shut off my phone. And then she said, oops, by saying that, now I've jinxed it and the phone's going to ring. And then that weird sound you just heard was the phone ringing.
It's not a weird sound. It's a sonic screwdriver. You should tag Doctor Who in the tags of this. You'll get thousands and thousands of hits.
All looking True for songs facts. By The Who.
No! Doctor Who is very popular. It's very hip with all the hip kids these days.
So anyway, so who was it in the government of Afghanistan who wanted to keep Americans from voting?
Nobody.
Nobody. The government of Afghanistan, when the U.S. invaded Afghanistan, the government
because
of
Because the U.S. invaded Afghanistan. Afghanistan did not invade the U.S.
Correct. The government of Afghanistan did nothing against the United States people, the United States government. The government of Afghanistan actually went to the UN and said, look, if they want this Osama bin Laden guy, why don't they just send us extradition papers?
Right.
Which they didn't do.
Which Instead, is what you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
If Osama bin Laden had been in Britain, that's what we would have done.
Yeah.
But he wasn't. He was in a little country in the Middle East that's full of people that we don't care if we bomb.
And opium.
And opium.
And a pathway for an oil pipeline.
Right.
And if anybody ever wants, and that phone we can't do anything about. Okay, so before the phone interruption, that's two phone interruptions in one podcast. Have
right?
we ever had two phone interruptions?
I don't think so.
Anyway, so we were talking about, oh yeah, Afghanistan.
Right.
The government of Afghanistan never attacked us.
Right. Well, let me ask this question. Did we ever declare war on Afghanistan?
No. Actually, Ron Paul asked that Congress declare war.
Mm-hmm.
If I recall, Ron Paul asked. Maybe I'm thinking about the Iraq situation.
Right.
But they would not declare war.
Right.
So we haven't been in, the U.S. hasn't been in a declared war since World War II.
We didn't declare war on Vietnam?
No. That was a police action. That was also a police action.
Wow. So what you're saying is, without declaring war, we're flying into countries and bombing them.
No, we're not. I'm not.
Okay. The United States government is sending people into those countries to randomly kill people. Doesn't that make the United States terrorists?
When you use fear for political gain, that's what terror is.
At least Al-Qaeda has had the decency to declare open jihad on us.
That makes
their actions a legitimate war if you want to give legitimacy to the state.
They just don't have their own geographical kingdom to do this in.
Right.
Finally, the last one is Iraq.
Right.
The people of Iraq voted regularly
right.
before the U.S. invasion.
Right.
There was already elections there.
Right.
So the invasion of the U.S. into Iraq was not so they could vote.
Right.
And it certainly wasn't to protect Americans, quote, right to vote.
Right, because Iraq had nothing to do with 9/11 at all.
So there's never been a U.S. military action ever that had anything to do with the right of Americans to vote.
Right.
And here's the other problem.
Which means the military does not defend your right to vote.
The military does not defend your right to vote. It never has, it never will, and that's not only a myth, that's an outright lie.
Right.
It just never happened.
Right.
Now, the other thing is the phrase right to vote. Rights are inherent in a person.
Right.
So when a baby
you
is
have
born,
the right to own yourself.
Exactly.
And breathe and, you know, own yourself.
Yeah. There's no magic line drawn in a person's life that says, before you get to this magic age, you don't have the right to, say, life or liberty of whatever kind.
Right.
But when you cross this magic line of age, let's say 18, mm-hmm. you suddenly have a new right.
This goes back to the idea of, what is it, positive and negative rights? Or,
yeah.
Or do they, what do they call them? I think it's positive and negative. I can never remember. It's the libertarian homeschooler goes on about this a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, you have the right to yourself and the things of your own making, but you don't have the right for other people or
right.
their things. And voting is inherently the act of telling other people what to do.
Yeah. So it's the opposite of a right.
It's the opposite of the right. You yeah. don't have the right. In fact, I have the right to not be told what to do by you by a vote.
Right. So
you are infringing upon my rights by voting.
Exactly. It's the exact opposite of a right. It's the infringement upon another.
Right.
It's attempting to use the force of government to get other people to do what you want them to do.
Right.
No matter whether they want to cooperate or not. That's
right.
That's what a vote actually is. So there is no right to
voting
vote.
Voting is aggression.
Yeah. So there is no right to vote. And the military has never defended your ability to vote.
Right.
So that whole series of words glued together make no sense.
Right.
And then in addition...
But it's a good bumper sticker.
Like most...
And people don't want to think anything beyond what they can fit on a bumper sticker.
Very true. Now, the other thing is whether or not it's...
Your duty as a citizen.
Yeah. Your duty as a citizen to vote.
Which basically, you know, it you can just replace those words with it's your duty as a slave to vote.
Yeah. Well, and then here's the other thing. If it were a right, step backwards, even though we've already proved it's not a right. But
right.
But if it's a right to vote, if it's a right to vote, then why can some people vote and other people not vote?
Right.
How do you have that right taken away from some people or never given to some people and given to other people?
Right.
Isn't that what a privilege? Isn't that what privileges are
right.
called? So some people say to a brother and a sister, one that's a year older than the other, one of them has the right to vote and the other doesn't.
Right.
That makes no sense whatsoever. Or a person... that's born on one side of a magical line drawn by a politician. Let's say a politician comes to the hospital
mm-hmm.
tomorrow
mm-hmm.
and he's got a great big felt marker and he walks through the delivery room and he drags this felt marker across the delivery room and he says, "Behold, a border." And all the children born on one side of that felt marker line
mm-hmm.
are called children A and all the children on the other side are called children B. And the children of children A, the children born on A, can vote. And the children on the B side can't vote.
Mm-hmm.
Would that make any sense?
No, they do it all the time.
That's exactly...
Boundaries, borders between countries are just invisible lines drawn on a map by politicians.
Yeah. And so...
And they mean nothing.
And so if this child born on one side of this magic invisible line walks to the other side of the magic invisible line, somehow... they no longer have the right to vote.
Right.
Or even have the right to exist there.
Yeah.
Your right to exist ceases when you cross the magic line on the ground. A little odd.
Yeah.
But that's what people believe.
Yeah. It's the faith in the state. And it's the faith that is so ingrained in them that if you begin to point out the inconsistencies in it, they respond with violence and anger.
It's amazing how angry even people who call themselves libertarians and call themselves minarchists or even people who will tell you, I hear this, you know, more than once. I have had people say to me, well, I agree with you on theory that the government is evil and does these horrible things, but we just don't have a choice. We have to do these things now because this is the real world that we live in. But if you take that argument into other realms.
Well, Larkin Rose does a great video on that with the slaves.
Yeah. Yeah. The whole fallacy behind it is really easy to tear down.
Yeah.
Stefan Molyneux has talked about that with slaves as well.
Yeah.
So all you have to do is just take the argument and apply it to some kind of a different situation and see if it still makes sense or not.
Right.
And it doesn't. Let's say you're, let's go back to, we've talked about this before. Let's say you're in an abusive relationship.
Mm-hmm.
The husband comes home late from work. He's been at the bar. He's drunk. He beats his wife.
Right.
Well, should she do something about that or should she just say, well, this is, I'd like to live in a world where my husband doesn't beat me.
Right. But this is the real world and I have to deal with it.
Yeah. In
so
the real world.
It's
you know,
best if I just make sure his dinner's ready.
Yeah. Bow to him. Make sure I don't upset him. And, you know, isn't that along the same line of logic?
Yeah.
You know, to look at the at the real world and say the systems that we have are bad and flawed and wrong, but we're going to go ahead and just tolerate them and put up with them because we don't have a choice. I think that's either cowardice or it's a lie. It's denying that you really believe those systems are wrong.
Right.
And you're actually still worshiping them, and you still think we can't get along without them.
Right.
It's still a level of dependency on those systems.
Right.
So, but they do. They get really mad when you point these things out.
Oh, yeah. Really, really mad. And mad to the point of violence.
Yeah.
And they make statements. They make these bumper sticker statements, and then they shut down and they won't listen to an answer.
Yeah.
You know, they'll say things like, well, who would build the roads? And then when you say, well, there's this and there's, I can hear you.
Yeah.
You know, no, I've won the argument.
They'll go to a personal attack on you.
Yeah.
They'll try to change, or they'll throw one thing at you. Okay. So you say, all right, now I'd like to take this and analyze it and see what's wrong with your position on this.
Right.
But they don't want to do that. What they want to do is change it to another argument,
right,
and throw another one-liner.
Or they just Bill O'Reilly you.
Yeah.
Where they just continually loudly ask the same exact question, and when you try to answer it, they just ask the question again louder over top of you.
Yeah. It's kind of like if you're in a foreign country and they don't understand English, so you should just yell at them in English louder.
Right.
Because that'll help them understand.
Right.
Well, I think we about hit our time.
All right.
So thanks for coming back on the show and being the co-host again.
Yay!
Folks, for more on liberty, property rights, and the zero aggression principle, go to badquaker.com. Thank you for listening.